Blog Talk Radio.
Mike T is off this week, so I brought in the big gun. And no, I'm not talking about the one that Plaxico used to shoot himself up.
I was actually unable to host my show last night. Sean did a one-hour solo, apparently ranting about the New York sports teams. 90 minutes probably is not even enough for what's going on in sports over the last week or two. So looking forward to talking to hanging with you for the next 90.
And it'll be 90 or so minutes of pure fun. Coming up at 7:30, Jared Greenberg from NBA TV and CNN. He'll come on and talk about the NBA with us for a little bit. Big showdown on TNT tomorrow night, the Battle of New York. New York versus Brooklyn, or as we like to call it, the bad versus the ugly. It's ugly in New York sports as far as basketball is concerned. Doesn't get much better with basketball than it does in football. New York football is just as ugly. And now, you know, with all the moves going on in baseball, lots of news coming out of Yankee camp, news coming out of Mets camp, news coming out of Red Sox camp, all these different things happening. But we have to start with the New York Yankees. Ellsbury's signing last night, Seth, came to as a shock to a lot of people. Did it come as a shock to you?
Actually, it did. Jacoby Ellsbury is a nice player, fast, a good hitter, good fielder. But considering the Yankees have talked about getting under the $189 million luxury tax threshold, I was genuine, and their reticence to spend to pay Robinson Cano, which, to be perfectly honest, I have no problem with. The reality is Cano is a significantly better player than Jacoby Ellsbury. So if you're willing to, I'm not quite sure why you're willing to pay Jacoby Ellsbury $153 million for number one. You have a pretty solid, very comparable player, Brett Gardner, who you're paying $130 million less. So, Cano, I'm not the world's biggest Robbie Cano fan, but he is probably the best second baseman in baseball. If you're going to pay him $150, if you're going to pay Ellsbury $150, I don't think Cano is out of the realm for asking for more than that. So I don't particularly understand the move. It doesn't make a heck of a lot of sense to me, to be perfect.
Well, the move to get Ellsbury might come on the heels of not only Robinson Cano, but also Curtis Granderson probably going to the other side of town and heading over to the New York Mets. I actually like this move. I think it's a good move for the Mets. It gives them another veteran outfielder, another bat to go with David Wright, and to add some balance to, with losing Matt Harvey, it keeps the Mets in the news in a positive standpoint. Granderson to the Mets, good decision, bad decision, if it goes down?
I think, and again, I don't have the exact in front of me. Was the Granderson about 3 for $40 million, give or take?
Yeah. That's pretty much the deal.
If Granderson can stay healthy, it's a good deal. But that's an if. You know, same with Ellsbury. Hurt two of the last 4 years. Big if. They need... David Wright has no support in the lineup. You know, they have the pitchers. Obviously, Harvey's out for 2014. But you got Zach Wheeler. You got Neese. You have some talent on the pitching side. The hitting is nothing. So you need to sign, you know, you need to sign a bat. Granderson is starting to be a good clubhouse guy, a decent power hitter, pretty good fielder. 13, 14 million a year in New York, I think it makes sense to me. I have no problem with the deal.
Yeah, I don't have any problem with that one. And I also don't have any problem with the A.J. Brzezinski deal to the Red Sox. I think that's a great pickup for them. It's going to be interesting to see what goes on in Boston now. Boston left a little shocked with this Ellsbury deal. Did you like A.J. Brzezinski move to the Red Sox?
Well, they had to get somebody. I mean, I know that sounds like that's a stupid response. But most likely they were going to lose, and they may have lost him already the last day or two, but a little bit behind on some of this. Jared Salatamakia, I believe, was supposed to go to Florida, where that's the rumor. So they really needed to sign the catcher. Pazinski's a veteran hitter, veteran catcher, a decent hitter. He knows, you know, he's loud. He'll kind of probably fit into the Red Sox, clubhouse pretty well. So, I mean, for him, you know, this is his chance, you know, to get a ring after being in the league for, 12 years, 13 years, 15 years. So I think he has one already. But, you know, I mean, for a one-year deal for $8 million, yeah, why not? I have no issue with it at all.
In your opinion, the Yankees are not going to miss Phil Hughes, are they?
No. Phil Hughes is pretty much the great white hope for the last 5 years. And that anyone would sign him to a three-year, $25 million deal is stunning to me. That the Minnesota Twins, who are a pretty financially strapped, you know, they're not a big market team. They're not a team that spends like the Dodgers or the Cubs or the Red Sox are willing to do it. Absolutely shocks me. He needed, just like Joba Chamberlain, he needs a change. So there was no way he was going to come back.
Yeah, he's a guy who I don't think Yankee fans are going to miss because the potential word kept on being thrown around with him way too much. Him, Ian Kennedy, Joba Chamberlain, three guys who they thought were going to be the future of their franchise, now just leaves Joba Chamberlain in the bullpen, and he might be gone soon too. The most important thing this Yankee team needs right now is pitching, and they don't have a lot of it. The guys they have are not that good. So they're filling up the wrong positions. Obviously, you still need to know what's going on with A-Rod. You've got Jeter back. You're going to have Teixeira back. You're working on getting insurance just in case Cano doesn't come in. Because right now, I believe the Yankees are also talking with there's another second baseman. His name is Kelly Johnson.
Kelly Johnson.
Yeah. They're close to a deal now. So, and that's a $2 million deal. So the Yankees are not stupid, and they know what they're doing. It's just right now the A-Rod thing is holding them up. What's going on there? Now here's the thing: do you go after another ace, or do you hope that CC solves the problem at this point?
Well, I don't think one really precludes the other. CC wasn't an ace last year. They didn't have an ace last year. They have another $120 million invested in them. They have no choice. They're not going to get rid of them. There's the only pitcher realistically they may be able to get is Tanaka from the Japanese League, and even that would be I don't know if he's an ace. You know, according to what I've read, and I don't claim to be the world's greatest expert on Japanese baseball. You know, people are seeing him as more of a number two or a number three. I know they've made a one-year $15 million, I believe, offer to Kuroda, who was the best pitcher they had last year. The reality is it's a very strange situation because it's a team that needs to rebuild. But they can't rebuild because, number one, you have $27 million in A-Rod, $20 million in Teixeira, $22 million in Sabathia. So it's very difficult to rebuild. Plus, you're in New York, and New York does not take a great look, is not big on rebuilding for more than a short period of time. But the reality is they need an overhaul, and it's not going to happen.
I think that the Yankees are in a lot of trouble, more trouble than we all know. I think that
I think we all know they're in trouble. Teixeira is a bit of below average first baseman. I mean, Teixeira hasn't even come close to living up to his contract. If Cano leaves, you're not going to have a great second baseman. Shortstop, I mean, Jeter played, what, 20 games last year, 30 games last year? You don't know what you're getting in that. A-Rod's a mess. You know, we're not going to even discuss that. They signed Brian McCann for $17 million a year, and I didn't like that either. I like Brian McCann. But you let Martin go for 2 years at $18 million, and you're signing a catcher who hit .250 or 20 home runs for $17 million a year? Your outfield's mediocre. Your starting pitcher is mediocre. There is no position I can think of outside of Cano where you're above average right now. They're not going to disappoint. They're a mess.
Are we safe to say that like New York sports right now is in shambles?
I think that's pretty obvious. The best team that I can think of in New York sports team is probably the New York Islanders. And that's not exactly a ringing endorsement. You look around, the only team more embarrassing than the Nets is the Knicks. The Mets have just had bad luck. The Jets, I mean, offense is possibly the worst in the NHL, the worst in the NFL. The Giants have been a huge disappointment. And, you know, while hockey, they've all been, the Giants, the Devils, the Rangers, and the Islanders have all been pretty mediocre. So it's as bad as I've ever seen it. I mean, I'm looking right now at the hockey standings. And admittedly, I'm not the world's hockey guy, but the Rangers would have the 8 seed, the Devils the 9 seed, and the Islanders are horrendous. I'm sorry, they're like the 13th seed. It's an absolute crap show, for lack of a better term, in New York.
I also think that the big story also in New York this past week, we're going to shift over to the NBA a little earlier than expected here. The biggest stories in the NBA this week was the reassignment of Lawrence Frank. And you know the ties that I have with the Nets. Apparently, you know, I thought you and I spoke about when Jason Kidd got hired, and I told you how much of a joke I thought this was at the time. And then I also felt very strongly that if they would have kept the team they had intact last year with Gerald Wallace and Chris Humphries and guys like that, you can get away with struggling your first year as a rookie head coach. As soon as you made that trade for Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett, you bring in Karolinko, you have Terry. As soon as you make this deal, you set yourself up that anything but a championship or a visit to the Eastern Conference Finals is nothing but disappointment.
We thought it was a joke 6 months ago. I think it's a joke now. You know, Jason Kidd, while an extremely savvy basketball player, you know, is not someone with, you know, that anyone has really seen with a great deal of maturity off the court over his career, forgetting his, you know, the abomination that was, you know, that the whole marriage and the, you know, the domestic battery on both sides. You know, he pretty much forced himself out of Dallas. He forced himself out of Phoenix. He forced himself out of New Jersey. You know, this is not something, who's, you know, and then, of course, 2 weeks before he gets hired, he gets a DWI in the hand. So this is not someone who I thought of when I was thinking of someone who would be, you know, a player coach or a guy automatically transitioning in, would have the maturity to fulfill this position, number one. Number two, to come into a team with championship aspirations, that's ridiculous. He never should have been hired. He never should have been put in this position. And why Billy King's, you know, this was Billy King's decision. And, you know, Lawrence Frank is a very good coach. He took two mediocre New Jersey Nets teams to NBA Finals. He did a very good job. And, you know, I don't know the specifics, but even look at the maturity, what happened with the soda incident. I mean, have you ever heard something so stupid?
It's true. It's really true. And my attitude with this whole thing is, and I don't mean to correct you, but it was Byron Scott who was the head coach of those Nets teams. Lawrence Frank got fired the third year of the kid of the year kids Jason Kidd was there. Kidd basically, Kidd helped Frank win his first 13 games as a head coach. You remember he won 13 straight. Listen, the fact of the matter is there is a reason why Lawrence Frank didn't have the same success he had with Kidd as a player than he did, than he did without. You know, he didn't have the success without Kidd. He got a head coaching job in Detroit, and he did an okay job with the talent he had there. They let him go, and he was supposed to be the lead assistant on the Los Angeles Clippers. He was supposed to go with Doc Rivers out there. He decided to go with Jason Kidd, and he's supposed to be Jason Kidd's mentor. This whole thing has turned out to be an absolute disaster. The Nets have not been healthy since day one of the season. Deron Williams missed time during the preseason, wasn't ready to go. You have now Paul Pierce is out for 2 to 4 weeks with a broken hand. Kirilenko hasn't been in for more than two straight games in a row. Garnett is not playing well. You know, this is a disaster for Brooklyn. You know, if this would have happened last year, I'd say it would have been worse because they would have been opening a brand new building. So, you know, they have a lot of sellouts right now, but those tickets are going to be on StubHub, and I think they're going to make a lot of moves to see if they're going to have any buyers for any of these older guys if things don't improve by the All-Star break.
Yeah, but you know what's funnier? They're still in better shape than the Knicks are. Because despite all the craziness, New Jersey, you knew it was going to take some time to meld the talent together. You didn't think it would be this bad of a start. You knew it would take some time. And as you said, the injuries have been awful. What do you even say about the Knicks at this point?
Well, here's what I said about the Knicks. And you know me, I watched a bunch of Knick games so far this year. I watched Sunday night's game against I'm losing my train of thought who they played on Sunday.
I don't remember.
It was not Denver. I'll look it up real quick. But I remember watching the game, and I said the Knicks are going to blow it in the second half. No, they played the New Orleans Pelicans.
Okay.
They played the Pelicans, and they lost Anthony Davis in the first couple minutes of the game with a broken hand. And you're sitting there saying, go to the basket, and you're settling for jump shots. There's no dribble penetration, and there's no ball movement whatsoever. There's one thing you can always say about Jordan, and you can say about guys like LeBron James and guys, great leaders on the court. And the one thing you were able to say is they knew to bring the best out of their teammates. You know, you look back to Jordan. Jordan, as much as Jordan averaged 28 points a game, 30 points a game, so on and so forth, he averaged at least 5 assists a game, which means he was getting the minimum amount of was 5 assists. Carmelo, for his career, is averaging 3.2 assists per game. He doesn't move the ball. 9 out of 10 times when you have a scorer like him, you have a scorer, you're not going to have the success. That's why, you and I jokingly said on previous shows and on other programs and in private that I consider Carmelo Anthony the modern-day Dominique Wilkins. You pay to come and watch him play. He's going to score a lot of points. But you just don't put an expectation level that he's going to win a lot of games for you because he's not going to. This team is plagued with the lack of talent, spare parts from other teams. You know, guys like Felton, Metal World Peace, players that teams really don't need. And they're getting upset that they can't win. But I said before that this team, last year, this team overachieved tremendously. Now, they're playing at the level that I sort of expected them to play at. This is not a
surprise.
I'm
going to be honest. I did not expect him to play this low of a level.
I expected them to be a little bit better, but I expected them to be bad, but not this bad. But and it's not like Tyson Taylor's going to come back and make that big of a difference. You can't ride on the health of Tyson Chandler.
I think there was, I mean, in my mind, the consensus was that the Nets, Heat, Indiana, Pacers, and Bulls were going to go out for the first four. We're going to be the first four teams. The Knicks were stagnant at number five. If you look down the Eastern Conference, you didn't see anything down low that really hit you. You know, teams like Cleveland and Detroit and Washington, you thought were maybe a year or two away. Atlanta is always at number six seed, number seven seed that nobody's very concerned about. Sorry for all those Hawk fans, but we all know there really aren't too many Hawk fans. So the Knicks were kind of stuck in this number five. And I didn't see any, because of Carmelo, I didn't see how they really could move further down, because there was just no talent anywhere really further down. But man, they are a disaster.
I'm gonna give it to you straight right here. As bad as it is, with the Nets at 5-13 and the Knicks at 3-13, then both teams still have a shot at the Atlantic Division Championship. But the number three seed right now in the Eastern Conference is the Washington Wizards at 9-9.
Yeah.
So you have Indiana at 16-2, Miami 14-4, and then Washington is at 19-9. Okay.
Yeah. 9-9.
Yeah. 9-9. Yeah. 9 wins, 9 losses. Boston's fourth right now with 8-12.
Yeah, but what's great is you go to the West, and the only three teams under 500 in the West are Utah and Sacramento, which were supposed to be two of the three worst teams in the league, Phoenix being the other, and Minnesota, who's a half game below 500. Everyone else is at 500 or above. We've never seen a disparity like this before. It's never happened, as far as I know, in the NBA. So it is hideous. And, you know, I'm not going to lie. I picked Indiana over the Clippers in the final. I kind of liked Indiana this year, and I was kind of surprised everyone was sleeping on them a little bit in regards to Chicago, actually. I didn't know how Rose was going to come back, and obviously it's a shame what happened. But you figured that Chicago would still be competitive. You figured that the Nets and the Knicks would be competitive. This is horrible. And both teams are completely hamstrung by the salary cap. You know, the Nets, I believe, traded their pick to Boston. So even if they end up in this, you know, the best lottery of probably since the LeBron lottery of, I think it was 05, you know, you're still, they're not going to get anything out of it.
Well, you look up and down the West, you know, it's crazy. It's 15-3, 15-3, 13-3. And Portland right now has a tiebreaker over San Antonio, so they're the number one team in the West. In the East, you know, it's going to get better. Like, we all know it's going to get better for some of these teams, but this is disgusting.
Yeah, I mean, Portland is a great story with Lillard and LaMarcus Aldridge and Wes Matthews and Batum. Now, this was a team that they were expecting to kind of be on maybe the precipice of being an eighth seed. And again, it's really, really early. Like you said, the tiebreaker. There is no tiebreaker 18 games into a season. You know, it just doesn't exist. But, you know, for this team to be 15-3 with this kind of talent, I mean, this is a really amazing coaching job by Terry Stotts.
Oh, yeah. It's a great, great coaching job. And, you know, but some of the other headlines that are going around the league right now, so I just saw Kim Gilchrist is going to be out for a little while. You know, I still think that the Bobcats have an opportunity to make the playoffs this year. I like their young talent. They can run up and down the floor. They're not going to really ever go anywhere. I think this year is the year that they're going to try and make that push last year for the Bobcat name to make a push to do something, and they become the Hornets again for next year. Then you have, you know, you have Chicago, like you just said, with Derrick Rose going out. I don't know if they can piece together another year. I think this might be a year where they end up in the lottery. Now, I'm going to throw something at you, and I'm going to throw something at Jared Greenberg in a few minutes when he comes on. But you tell me if this is too far of a fetched idea. I don't think Derrick Rose is ever going to come back and play and be the way he was. Okay?
Why would that be far-fetched? He's had two knee injuries that have taken him out for over 2 years.
But here's where the crazy part of my thoughts come in. If you're the Chicago Bulls, do you amnesty Derrick Rose and then try and get LeBron James?
Huh. It's funny, we've been hearing the amnesty Carlos Boozer for so long. I haven't heard too much about amnestying Derrick Rose. I don't know what Derrick Rose's contract. What is Rose's contract at this point? Is it 6 year, $100 million, $120 million, something like that, or the 5 year, $120 million? Is he a max deal?
I'll give you the exact number in a second. That's not something I don't think anyone should rule out. You know what I mean? Like, he goes, look, you know he's never going to be the same, and he's getting a lot of money. Okay, so he's getting a lot of money. To give you exact numbers, he's making 17.6 this year, 18.8 next year, 20,093,000 the following year, and then 21 in 2016, 2017. You would amnesty that. You don't have to, you know, the money doesn't go against the cap. Maybe you resign him for less money, and then you go out and get LeBron James. You're still going to have...
This is actually funny. The expert on this is Sean, from my co-host on the radio show, who pretty much his dream job is to be a capologist. So he knows this better than me. But I'm not sure you can resign someone after you amnesty them as a director.
I believe you're right. I don't think you can. But it's, I know, I do think it's something that the Bulls should think about.
It's
hard. You're taking a risk.
Yeah, you really are. And especially because the thought is because of the torn meniscus, this is something that you can come 100% back from. So it's, I mean, I know the rumors have been out there, but because he can come back at 100% potentially, or 90%, 90% of Derrick Rose is still better than 85% of the NBA. I would, you know, and he's also, you know, he's the one who drives your marketing. You know, people buy his uniform, people buy his sneakers, so on and so forth. Well, the sneakers go to Nike, not really the Bulls. I would be really surprised. I'd be surprised if they amnestied him. Considering how much they've held off on amnesty on Boozer, which would have made sense 2, 3, 4, you know, over the last couple of years. So, I don't know. I can see it, but I'd be surprised.
It's just something that they should definitely think about. And I wouldn't rule it out either. It's just something that they can, I don't know. I just think it would be interesting to see if they would do it. I don't think they would. I think even both you and I both know that they wouldn't. Jared Greenberg just told me he's not going to be on until 8. He is stuck in a meeting, so we'll continue this conversation for a few more minutes. As far as the rest of the league is concerned, Seth, you know, if you are the Nets, or if you're another team in the league, would you go to the Nets and ask if they can move, if they would move anybody? Or do you want any of those pieces on that team?
Yeah, I want Andre Kirilenko, and the Nets aren't going to trade him. I mean, think about it. You have a point guard who has never been the same since he came to New Jersey. Certainly hasn't warranted either his contract or status. Remember, 3 years ago, the argument was who's the best point guard in the league, Chris Paul or Deron Williams? And this was a legitimate argument. You know, Deron Williams may not be a top 7 to 10 point guard in the league at this point. Joe Johnson is the highest paid player in basketball, or one of the top 3, I believe, and he's
an above average point shooting guard at this point. Paul Pierce is 36 years old. Kevin Garnett is 58 years old. You know, no one's going to be stopped trading for these guys. And, you know, Brook Lopez has a four-year, $56 million contract. You can't trade him. He's the only person, he's young enough where he's the only person that's worthwhile.
Well, here's the next situation. 21 this year, 23, and then 24 for Joe Johnson, which is probably the worst contract in basketball. Darren Williams, 18, 19, 21, then 22 over the next four seasons. Pierce has got 1 year left in his deal of 15-3. You have Lopez, who's got 3 years left on his deal, 14-6, 15-7, and 16-7. Garnett, 11, and this year and next year. But Garnett always has the option to retire, but the money will still be on the cap. Jason Terry's got 5.2, 5.4. Outlaws money doesn't count on the cap, and everybody else is in the lower salary range. So, if you're a team, you're not trading for Joe Johnson. You don't want that money on your cap. If you're a team, you're losing $15 million off the books. Okay, that's different with Paul Pierce. Garnett is, Garnett's making $11 million.
I mean,
they
went all in on this year. And, you know, the one thing I am willing to say is we're only 20 games in. This is a team that's not built for October or November or December or January. This is a team that, you know, especially because of the overall weakness of the Eastern Conference, this is a team that if they meld in March, what's the difference? This is not a team where the home field, the home court advantage is going to matter. They're such a veteran team, it shouldn't be that impactful.
Oh, yeah.
So if you can get this team together by late February, early March, playing some decent basketball, and they go up to, and they get it to 500 or a game or two above, I mean, think about it. You're the Miami Heat. You're the two-time defending champion. But would you really want to play a healthy Brooklyn Nets team in the first round? What are their weaknesses? Well, Miami doesn't have a center and doesn't have a point guard. And the Nets have both. The Nets are a big, strong team when they're healthy with Reggie Evans and Garnett and Lopez. And they have Darren Williams, who, when healthy, and his head is on straight, is a top five, it still can be a top five, 7 point guard. Miami doesn't want that. So, you know, they still scare me. The Knicks, I see nothing. You know, that's just a team that isn't just a disaster. It's just a disaster at this point.
Well, and here's something scarier for you. I pulled up the Knicks salaries. The Knicks, they have Amari Stoudemire 21 and 23 for the next 2 years. $23 million next season. You have Carmelo Anthony, who has the opt-out going into next season. Metta World Peace, who has an opt-out for next season. J.R. Smith is at $5 million. Shumpert's at 1.7. So your main two guys, Stoudemire and Anthony, are 21 and 21. You can't really build a team like this. You know, do you think Melo would take less money, honestly?
Do I think what?
Do you think he would take less money?
To stay here, is he not? Why?
Why would he take less money? It's a very, very, very valid question. Would he take less money?
But what?
To stay here? To get more pieces here. To get more pieces,
Oh, but you look at this team. Next year, they still have... First of all, he doesn't strike me as the type who would. And even if he would, you'd have to go to a team where they could actually put two pieces around it. Next year, the Knicks have $91 million under the cap. They're not going anywhere. This is the team they got. This is the team they bought. And, you know...
look, everyone applauded Stoudemire coming to New York when LeBron and Wade and Bosh and all these guys wouldn't come. But how the Knicks could sign a contract without insurance on his knees has destroyed the franchise. It's mind-blowing. You know, this team was built to have a three-year run, 13, 14, 15. And in 15, everybody's off the cap. But the reality is this team just can't go anywhere. You know, it's a team, you know, you look at it, the veterans here, but they're not winning veterans, except for Chandler. You know, Arvarjani has been okay. J.R. Smith, J.R. Smith is J.R. Smith. You know, Stoudemire is at the end of his run. Anthony needs players around him who he respects. The reality. That's the reality.
Yeah. You don't think he respects these guys?
What do you say?
You don't think he respects playing with guys like Bargnani and Chandler and Felton and Shumpert?
When Anthony played in the Olympics, and he was told, you're going to score, but you're going to rebound and play defense, and be the all-round player that you can be, he did. Now, to be fair, we're not expecting him to play with Carmelo, to play with LeBron, or to play with Chris Paul, or this, that, the other thing. But he's Dominique Wilkins. He's Bernard King. I mean, he's a great scorer. But Bernard King was a much better scorer in a quicker offense. You know, he holds the ball, and he's a great scorer. He's not a great player. You know, that's how I see it.
I was trying to figure out whether they have used their amnesty clause, yes, but then I realized they have with Chauncey Billups.
Chauncey Billups. Otherwise, they would have amnestied Stoudemire last year.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, the amnesty Billups to be able to afford the trade for Anthony when there was a 90% chance they were going to pick up Anthony in the free agency anyway.
No, that's
you can't make this stuff up.
No, they're in salary cap hell. They are in salary cap hell. And the Nets are no much better. But, you know, at this point, you sort of like the Nets' chances of being able to bounce back from this more than the Knicks.
For this, yeah, I do. I'm also curious to see, you know, who the new coach is going to be. Because I don't think either Kidd or Woodson last. Forget the year. I'm not sure they last another month.
No, I think Kidd's not going to make it through the season. I think Jason Kidd's going to get let go. I think Woodson's going to be. If Woodson loses tomorrow, if the Knicks lose tomorrow, Woodson's gone. I think if the Nets continue to lose and they don't get much better within 2 weeks, I think Kidd is gone too. And I think that Frank takes over as head coach.
Well, because right now the problem is, and I don't know this because I'm not, you know, you have more insider information than I do, with Frank being pretty much dropped to a, you know, a video coordinator where he's not even on the bench. Is he going to have the respect of the players?
That's the question. Like, the players, I didn't think this was going to work because you have guys like Garnett, Pearson, Johnson, and stuff like that who've all played with Kidd at some form or another, or, you know, they played against him on the floor. I just think there's a respect factor that's not there for those guys. I was wondering the relationship between Jason Kidd and Darren Williams on how that's going to work. You know, I there's a lot of more questions about Kidd going in than there was this. I had more feelings that this wasn't going to work than it was going to work. And the two teams that are probably laughing the most about the whole entire situation are one of the Boston Celtics, because even though they have $71 million right now in salary, they're looking at 48 next year with a lot of money coming off their books. Wow, that Gerald Wallace contract is awful. that's an awful contract. And it's not like it's an expiring where they can just trade it. It's this year, next year, the year after with $10 million apiece. Jeff Green is $8.7 and $9.2 million, and you know he's going to want money. at the end of this contract. Brandon Bass, after next year, is going to want to move too. So, you know, the Celtics have set themselves up for 2 years from now, 3 years from now, to have all the options there. And Boston's a great place to play. Great city.
No, it depends who you ask. Bill Russell was never a big fan of it, but to me it really is a great sports city. I may not like it, I may not root for the teams, but my partner Sean, he talked about this on the radio show that he lived in Boston for 2 years. He's a native New Yorker. All these other cities, New York, D.C., Atlanta, while there may be a home base, well, not Atlanta, Atlanta is a terrible sports city, but while New York and D.C. have a home base, there is a lot of transient into it, transients that live in New York, so it is a little bit more spread out. Nobody ever leaves Boston, and that's why they have such an immense pride in their team, and why people there are treated like gods.
Yeah, no, I get you. And to make things even more compelling about the whole deal, there's a possibility now that both Pierce and Garnett are not going to be around in the lineup for that first visit back to Boston. Wouldn't that be something if there was some sort of deal pulled off and before they can even go back to Boston, they get traded somewhere? That'd be to me fun. I don't know why, but it just would be. With all that other being said, other quick notes around the NBA. Next week looks like it's going to be the week for Kobe Bryant to come back. Are we going to ever see this the Kobe Bryant we known for years that we're going to be used to seeing, or is this going to be a totally different Kobe Bryant that we have to be adjusted to and be prepared for?
Are you asking my opinion?
Yeah, I'm asking your opinion.
I think he's Kobe Bryant. I think he's a freak of nature. I cannot believe he didn't give a hometown discount. I really can't believe that.
Really?
Not only did he not give a discount, I can't believe that the Lakers would pay him that much. I mean, this is a 37-year-old guy coming off, a torn, whatever he tore, I forgot. Is it his ACL he tore?
Yeah, he tore his ACL.
I mean, why are you paying him $25 million a year?
Yeah.
I don't understand.
That's the thank you salary. that's the thank you salary. To him. Thank you for doing everything that you've done. You're a great guy. We love you. We love Kobe. Type of attitude.
Because not only does it make no sense, but it also screws them up for free agent purposes. So.
Yeah. I wouldn't have done it. I wouldn't have made that deal.
Yeah, I would have, look at Tim Duncan. Signed a contract for 3 years, $30 million. I'm not saying go down to $2 or $3 million a year, but you could have had two max contracts. And, you know Kevin Love is aching to be in L.A. You know that LeBron is going to show some interest, Carmelo is going to show some interest, and you pretty much broke yourself. You pretty much broke the team because there is no way, if you can't find two max free agents, what are we doing here? This is the Lakers. This is a team, look, they've had some bad luck. They should have had Chris Paul. That should have happened. They probably should have won another title here or there. I mean, I shouldn't say that's been bad luck. But, Andrew Bynum, bad luck. Dwight Howard, a disaster. But this was, you could have rebuilt very quickly. If you're Kobe Bryant, you sign for $10 million, and you bring in Kevin Love, and you bring in, LeBron would have been a bit much, but, whatever, another top-tier, mid-to-top-tier guy, guess what? You're back in the running again.
Well, I actually like the move that they made this year, bringing Chris came in, the offset pile of Gasol. You know me, I'm a very traditional guy where I like to have a power forward, a center, a small forward, and a point guard. Like, they still, even with the Kobe extension, they only have $35 million accounted for it for next year. That's still enough
to... That's not going to get you two max.
Okay, going through their roster, I'll name a few guys. You tell me whether you bring them back or not. You bring back Gasol.
No. If you were Gasol, would you come back?
They sort of ran me out of town. If I were Gasol, I would come back, but I wouldn't come. But I wouldn't, if I was in the Lakers' hierarchy, I wouldn't be bringing him back in 19-2. I'd probably bring him back maybe at like 6.
Do you think the Lakers are going to sign him? D'Antoni barely likes using him. You think they're going to sign him in 19-2?
No, I'm saying I would probably sign him for maybe 6 or 7.
My assumption is that he just wants out of L.A.
Yeah, I can see him actually. You know where I can see him going? I can see him going over to Memphis to play with his brother.
Go to Memphis? Well, they have Zach Randolph. You going to trade Zach Randolph?
There's something that needs to happen in Memphis.
Maybe you do trade Zach Randolph. You know, you need someone who can shoot the ball. And
yeah, that's their problem right now. Memphis has nobody who can shoot the ball.
Well, that was the expectation. That was my expectation, was that they were going to build. They were going to put together a team. They were going to go after a guy who could shoot. A Kyle Korver.
They bought in Mike Miller, but Mike Miller plays
6 games a year.
Yeah, I'm looking at their team. Zach Randolph, Marc Gasol, Mike Conley, Tyshawn Prince, Tony Allen, Ed Davis, Jared Bayless.
You just reading the roster?
I'm reading their roster. Listen, Lionel Hollins if you don't appreciate the job Lionel Hollins did last year, you appreciate it now. Look, they're struggling. It's hard to say a 9-8 team is struggling, but look, the reality of it is this is obviously not the same team they had last year. Lionel Hollins found a way to bring the best out of his boys, and now this team is just. There's maybe the lower half of the Western Conference. And I said before the season, Memphis will not be able to regain the success that they had from last year. I thought losing the head coach they had cost them about 10 wins. I say 10 wins.
Because
he was that good of a coach.
Well, to be fair, Marc Gasol broke his hand, if I remember correctly. So he's been out, I think. And so that would hurt anybody because you have Kostakoufis, I think, is his backup. So, Gasol is your best player. And Coach is never worth 10 games. I don't buy that at all. I think was he treated the way he should have been in Memphis? Probably not. But that's a decision for the owner to make. But yeah, the reality is they didn't. You know, they needed to take another step and bring in a two guard or two or three who can shoot. You have Tony Allen for defense. You have Poindexter. You have Tyshawn Prince for defense. You need to be able to shoot the damn basketball, and they can't do it.
And then you look over at the Denver Nuggets roster. Like, we want to talk about a team that's doing it with smoke and mirrors. You look at this team. This is, I think, you know me with the phrasing of spare parts. This team is all spare parts, and they're playing very well for Coach Brian Shaw. You know, Boston, McGee, Gallinari, Chandler, Hickson, Miller, Chris Anderson. I was trying to figure out why he was still in the gap. Mozgov, Randy Foy, Nate Robinson, Anthony Randolph. Kenneth Faried might be the biggest bargain in the NBA. For what he brings to the table, is only making $1.4 million this year.
Well, how much do you think Chicago's wishing they re-signed Nate Robinson right now?
Oh, God, yeah. especially for the price they're paying. Look, Denver is paying $2 million for him this year. That's it.
Yeah, but here is your reality that Ryan Shaw should be coaching the Brooklyn Nets right now. He was the logical choice. He's an ex-player that had spent 10 years assisting. Who did he assist? Bill Jackson?
Frank Vogel
in Indiana, who's probably the coach, was my coach of the year last year, probably would be the coach of the year this year. Well, no, probably Terry Stotts, but I mean, the team is 16-2. So, I mean, he was more than experienced, and he's a player that is not a contemporary, per se, of Garnett and Pierce. You know, Garnett's older than Jason's kid, or he's a year younger. These are contemporaries. It's very difficult to coach somebody that's older than you. It just is. You know, just like it's hard for me, you know, in the real world, when you're managing someone who is 4 years older than you, if their ego is maintained, then it's contained and it's fine. But name a basketball player's ego who's contained. So Brian Shaw was an obvious choice to me. And again, you know, I don't know, you know, he's also, to be fair, had been passed over for quite a few other jobs. So there may be a reason I don't know about why it didn't work with him in Brooklyn. But to me, Brooklyn was the obvious choice.
Yeah. Brian Shaw was the obvious choice. Actually, I thought keeping PJ Carlissimo was the right choice. The guy earned himself the opportunity to keep the job.
Yeah, he probably did. Just,
you know, he earned his stripes. PJ right now is going to do a great job in being a college hoops analysis guy for this year. He's going to do a great job with it. He should be still coaching the Nets or having another opportunity in the NBA. But you know, the reputation that PJ has is he's a tough coach. He's a tough, tough coach. And, you know, that's the reputation he has. And in the NBA right now that coddles the players, it's very, very, very difficult. It's very difficult to be a tough coach and control the players. Because, you know, one superstar has a problem. It's the coach that goes, not the superstar.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's, you know, that's been the way for many years now. And yeah, nothing is going to really change. That's not going to change any time in the near future.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you 110% on that.
You know, but the question also is, and I can kind of see this argument, I think PJ, it kind of reminds me almost like a Buck Showalter in baseball, where you use the hard nose is better for the younger players, because it really kind of makes them professional and puts them the right way. It's kind of like similar to Avery Johnson almost, that these guys who push and push and push, get tuned out very quickly by older pros. So I can kind of see why that may not have been, you know, I think Carlissimo earned the stripes, almost similar to what happened, actually very similar to what happened at USC with Ed Orgeron in college football this week. You know, you earn your stripes, but it doesn't mean that where you are is the right fit. And, you know, PJ, unfortunately, after the Sprewell choking incident, I don't believe, how many professional coaching jobs has he had? Head coach, one or two?
I think he's had three. I'll give you the exact number.
Portland and Golden State, I forget the third.
I thought it was Minnesota. But I'll give it to you in a second. No, you're right. He's had opportunities. He was with Portland in 97. 94 through 97, he was with Golden State from 97 to 99. Seattle, remember, you know, he was the Sonics coach. And then he took over the Brooklyn Nets last year.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is, then I apologize, Orgeron's not a good comparison. You know, then I don't have much of a problem with Carlissimo not getting, you know, when you've had three chances and not been overwhelmingly successful at any of them, how many chances do you really deserve?
Well, that's the same thing with Maurice Cheeks. Maurice Cheeks is coaching the Pistons right now. You know, I think that's a favor from Joe Dumars.
Well,
the reality is Joe Dumars is probably as much as well. I mean, he is a beloved in Detroit and beloved in the NBA. But Joe Dumars has not done a wonderful job the last 5 years, 7 years, starting obviously with Darko Milicic over Carmelo, Chris Bosh, Dwayne Wade. But signing of Charlie Villanueva, signing of Ben Gordon, I mean, signing of Josh Smith with this team, I mean, makes no sense to me at all. He's gotten a lot of passes. And, you know, I think Joe just has so much goodwill that he's probably there for life. I mean, he probably has a job for life in that regard.
Right.
But I haven't been overwhelmed with the jobs he's done over the last 5 years. And bringing Maurice Sheet doesn't really move the barometer one way or the other.
Yeah, well, remember, Cheeks was an assistant coach over with the Oklahoma City Thunder for those first couple of years with Scott Brooks. You know, Scott Brooks is another guy who did it the right way. He was a great player. Not a great player, but he was a serviceable player in the NBA. Same thing Carlisle. Both guys were serviceable players in the NBA. After they retired, they went right on the bench to learn and try to figure things out. And then they became champ. You know, eventually got their head coaching positions. Scott Brooks' job sort of came in by mistake, because they fired PJ. They fired PJ. Scott Brooks took over and ended up being the right fit. We all thought after the NBA Finals Scott Brooks was going to get fired after they lost to the Miami Heat for the coaching job either, because he made some really bad decisions. But I would definitely bring Brooks is a guy you definitely hire. Cheeks is not. I don't think Byron Scott's going to get another head coaching chance. Do you?
No, I mean that Cleveland. I mean, he's not in Cleveland. Is he? He's not coaching right now. He got fired, of course, from Cleveland this past summer. My fault. He doesn't.
Yes.
He's not coaching. What did you say?
No, he's sitting home right now.
Yeah, I mean, look, Scott got a bad rap, but as you said earlier, and I, you know, it was my mistake. He took two Nets teams to the finals. He took. He was, you know, he coached in Cleveland with some pretty bad teams, to be perfectly honest. I wouldn't be surprised to see him get another shot somewhere.
Yeah, I wouldn't give him another. It seems like when he shows up, when he first shows up to a team, they don't do that bad. Their first year, they usually struggle. And then they get better as they go along. Look, he had a 56-win season in New Orleans. He didn't win more than 24 games in Cleveland. In New Jersey, he had a 52-win campaign and a 49-win campaign. And then he got fired at 22-20 in 2003-2004. And then he got hired in New Orleans, 18-64, 38-44 his second year there. You know, then they had that one really good season. In 2007-2008, when they lost in the second round. what can you say? He's probably not going to get another coaching job. He's not even assistant coaching right now. Some of these players are not that. The transition doesn't work for some people.
Well, I mean, look, it's like everything else. I think it's easier being a role player because I think it's much more difficult to be a Larry Bird or a Magic Johnson, although Larry Bird obviously had success, but he had Dick Harter pretty much running the X's and O's, and Larry kind of was the CEO of it. But it's very difficult for star players who are blessed with such talent to kind of, in a lot of ways, to relate to some of these guys. Who either A, don't have the work ethic, or B, just don't have the talent. You know, I think it's easier for, you know, a Doc Rivers, who was a good point guard, but not a great point guard. A Scottie Brooks, as you said, who was an eighth man on a team. You know, guys who were role players, where I think it's a little bit easier for them to relate. Even Phil Jackson, you know, even going back a while, Phil Jackson was a seventh man, eighth man on the 73 Knicks title team. You know, he was never a star. And look how he got started coaching. He was coaching in Puerto Rico
And then he went to the CBA and coached for the Albany Patroons, I believe, or South Dakota Sioux, or something like that. And then he ended up being the last assistant for Doug Collins, who was brought in as a favor, almost. And then the rest is history. So I'm sorry, please.
I said, hold. We have a call online. Real Sports Talk Radio. You're on the air with Randy and Chess. Vegas,
hey guys,
here.
How you doing? Hey, I'm here.
How are
I'm
you?
Here. It's Seth Kaufman. How are you guys doing?
Hey,
Seth.
Seth Kaufman. A name from the past.
Yeah,
really.
I'm actually riding the train up from San Diego and listening to you guys. I had some time and I noticed that you're talking about basketball and it's interesting and I just want to chime in past the point now, but you guys are talking about the Amari contract with the Knicks and it's just reminiscent of the Larry Johnson contract. It's like just 10 years later all over again.
It is. It was, but I think Larry was at least in short. If I remember correctly, and I'd have to look up the numbers, it was about a 6-year, $90 million deal. And after the first 2 years, it's a pretty good call. Larry's back acted up, and
it wouldn't work out.
He was never really able to, kind of follow up what he was in Charlotte when he was with Alonzo Mourning for those first couple years.
Yeah, it's just a shame. The Knicks, it's hard to watch them, hard to follow them. It just, the talent's kind of there, but they don't have the two or three guys coming off the bench. They don't have the point guard. And like you're saying, Melo's just a ball hog, and it's not going to get done with those guys right now, and they just need to dismantle that team, in my opinion.
I agree. Luckily, if I remember correctly, you have a basketball team that's doing quite well. Your alma mater, led by freshman Aaron Gordon, beating Duke, Arizona, beating Oregon in football. You had a good couple of weeks, Mr. Kaufman.
Yeah, we did. It would have been nice if we had better showing at ASU, but we're going to a bowl game. Rich Rod's kind of turned that program around. We have some stud receivers coming in. So hopefully Mr. Carey will stay, and we could be on Team Kadeem next year, and we could rise to the top of the South in the Pac-12 there.
Yeah, Kadeem Carey, a potential top five running back coming out in this year's draft, had four touchdowns in their demolition of Oregon. And the basketball team, you've seen probably more than I have this year. Sean Miller has done a phenomenal job after a couple years of real mediocrity in Arizona and obviously a basketball school. Is this now a team, is this a final, you think this is potentially a Final Four team?
Oh, by all means. With the recruiting class they had coming in last year and this year, and I think it's Jarrett who left. If Jarrett had stayed, another big man, he was the first round, end of the first round pick this year,
right,
in the NBA.
Grant Jarrett, sure.
Yeah, they're just stocked. The bench is strong. They go with about 7-8 guys right now, I think. But they have the potential to come, I think, 10 guys that they're just bringing along, and it's just exciting, and it's good to be an Arizona fan. I haven't given up on them, but just watching them, it's good to be back at the top again.
Well, Seth, we have Jared Greenberg from NBA TV, so we're going to have to cut you off, but I actually have a good story for you about Sean Miller in Arizona, which I will tell you off the air. Thanks for the call, and it's good catching up.
Yeah, good luck, guys, and it's a pleasure listening to you, and continue the good job.
Thanks,
brother. Appreciate it.
Bye.
I'd like to welcome in our good friend of the show, Jared Greenberg from NBA TV and CNN. Jared, good evening, buddy. How are you?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Doing all right, man. Doing all right. So let's jump right into this. The beginning of the season has been very interesting. A bunch of different teams not living up to the expectation level and also being above the expectation level. But let's start with one of the bigger disappointments, especially here in the local area, the Brooklyn Nets. From what you have seen, what has been the biggest issue with the Brooklyn Nets so far?
I think it's injuries, without a doubt. The biggest cog to all of the transactions that happened this summer was still the point guard, and whether Darren Williams could guide this team and be the floor general that Jason Kidd was for so many years with all the different teams that he played for. And without Darren Williams in the floor, there's nobody really there to guide the ship. And, you know, now Paul Pierce is hurt. Brook Lopez has gone through his injuries. And Kevin Garnett has even been resting at times. So, to me, there's just no continuity and chemistry, and that's the biggest issue with this team.
Well,
go ahead, Seth. Sorry about that. Go ahead.
I mean, we talked pretty much almost ad nauseum about the Knicks and Nets over the last, you know, half hour or so. Which team do you really see has more potential to bounce back, or are they both really walking dead situations at this point?
I don't think either situation is great, but I think the Nets situation gives you a lot more hope because they've been injured. Obviously, Tyson Chandler's been out of the Knicks lineup, but you say with yourself with the Nets, we have not seen, you know, a full 2 weeks together with this team at full strength. So to me, the Nets have a lot more upside. I think the Knicks, you know, the key word has been identity. They just don't have it. You know, last year they were one of the best three-point shooting teams in the league that utilized that perimeter, helped free Carmelo to get his spot, work the post. Now there's nobody to help Carmelo at all, and there's just no identity with this team. And even with Tyson Chandler coming back, I don't know that they have a point guard, that they have the answer at the shooting guard position. What are they going to do with Shumpert? What's J.R. Smith's role? And they don't have enough three-point shooting at all on this team anywhere.
You know, Jared, if you're looking around on the Nets situation, of course, it starts off with their head coach, Jason Kidd. I've been one of those people who feels that Jason has been thrown in a no-win situation. I think if they would have kept the team intact they had from last year, you could have gotten away with a slow start and even a struggling 500 season. But as soon as you put the expectation level of championship on a rookie coach and then have the situation what you're going through with your coaching team, you know, where you send Lawrence Frank away, I think this is going to be, you know, what's the time frame do you give this team that if they don't have to gel by a certain point, they start making some moves?
Well, I don't know how many moves there are to make. They're pretty strapped with the money they've invested. I don't know that changing a head coach would necessarily be the answer. I think you have to be a little patient. And remember, listen, the saving grace for both the Knicks and the Nets is that they play in the Eastern Conference, which is terrible, and you have to think some of the teams that have played above expectation will come back to earth, and the Knicks and Nets, who had great expectations, will start to rise to the occasion. You know, I think we're all in this NFL mentality where we want to have a knee-jerk reaction after every great game, and granted, we're a month in now, and both teams are in the basement of their division, but I think, you know, there's plenty of time, unfortunately, because of how bad the East has been, for them to come at it. Will they challenge the Heat or the Pacers for the top seed? No, they won't. But they certainly still have enough time to get back into the playoff mix, get healthy, and get some of that chemistry back and become a playoff.
Well, I mean, you talked about how weak the East is, and obviously when your number three team is Washington at 9-9, it says it all. But when you look at the West and you see these teams on top, San Antonio, maybe a bit of a surprise because there may have been some hangover from last year's finals loss. This Oklahoma City is Oklahoma City. The Clippers are still very strong. Portland at 15-3, which is led by, you know, Damian Lillard and Aldridge. But how has Terry Stotts made this team? I don't want to say a juggernaut through the first 20 games of the season, but it almost seems like a pretty fair way to put it. How have they done
this? Well, you know, I think this team was pretty talented last year in terms of their starting five. The problem was the starting five had to play among the most minutes of any starting five in the NBA last year because, historically speaking, they had the worst bench ever in the history of the NBA. They were getting about 18 points a game from their reserves, which we've never seen a number lower than that. This year, they added some depth. And while they're not getting great point production from that bench, what they are doing is giving more options for Damian Lillard and LaMarcus Aldridge. Nick Batum is one of the best all-around basketball players. He does get talked about in the NBA. If you're a fantasy basketball player, you know how good he is. They added Robin Lopez, who was coming off a career year in New Orleans, to be a great complement to LaMarcus Aldridge in the center. And I think that, you know, we're really learning in the NBA that it takes a second year for teams to get that chemistry to come together and be competitive.
And that chemistry last year that helped propel the Golden State Warriors to that next level. This year they pick up Andre Iguodala. They lose a couple minor pieces, including Jared Jack, who went out to Cleveland. Are the Warriors a favorite at this point to take the Western Conference?
Are they the favorite to win the West?
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't say they're the favorite by any stretch, but I don't know if you guys saw what they did last night. They were down 27 points with about 9 minutes to go in the third quarter.
To Washington.
And they came back
to
win. It was an unbelievable game. You know, I think, you know, you mentioned that they lost a couple of minor pieces. I think that's a bit of an understatement. I think they lost a lot of major pieces from last year's team, and they did that to sacrifice to get Andre Iguodala in. I think some of those may come back to hurt them. I think they're lacking a little bit of depth on their bench. You know, the fear in Golden State is always two things. Number one, the injury history of Andrew Bogut and the injury history of Steph Curry. So who comes in to back up those guys? You know, the backup at point guard to Steph Curry has been Andre Iguodala, and now he's out for an extended period of time with a hamstring injury. You know, I don't know that they have necessarily the depth behind them. You know, Jermaine O'Neal has been playing out of his mind backing up Bogut when Bogut was suspended for one game last week. O'Neal had a phenomenal game, but I don't know that I want to count on Jermaine O'Neal for an 82-game schedule. I love the Warriors. I love the makeup of the team. I think they needed Iguodala because they needed that perimeter defender. They didn't have that last year. They didn't have a way to stop Tony Parker. So I think that helps them. But I think their bench is going to be a major question mark down the road.
And also, there's one other team that we have to bring up, and that was one of the Western Conference finalists from last year, Jared, and that is the Memphis Grizzlies. I made a very bold statement before, which Seth questioned me on. You really appreciate the job that Lionel Hollins did last season. Team doesn't look like the same team that finished off in the Western Conference Finals last year. I said that the coaching change cost them 10 wins. I'm going to go back on that now, maybe say about 5, but it's not the same Grizzlies team.
No, and, you know, right now they're dealing with their two best players being injured in Mark Gasol and Zach Randolph. They added a ton of new pieces. And I think for them, the chemistry of new guys in the locker room plus a coach who was on the coaching staff for the last couple of years, Dave Yeager, but still trying to implement some new ways of playing. I think for them it's going to take them a couple of more weeks, maybe another month or two. They're certainly playing better of late. Although they had a really bad loss to the Nets the other night. But again, they're playing without their strength of the team, which is Marc Gasol and Zach Randolph. But you have to love Mike Conley. He's once again putting together an unbelievable season. You know, and some guys like Quincy Pondexter and Jared Bayless, when they get it going, they're hot shooters and they're tough to stop. It's just, to me, they need to get healthy, get that chemistry, and then once they fully understand what Dave Yeager's trying to implement, I think they'll be fine. You know, I don't think we'll live up to a franchise record of wins, which they had last year. But, I think that they'll be, you know, in that range of being the 5-60 in the Western Conference.
I got to ask you about the two Los Angeles teams, the Clippers and the Lakers as well. We're quickly bouncing around the league with you. We know you're busy. The Clippers, you know, a lot of expectations with Doc this year being there. It just still seems like there's something missing from that team to push them over to the next level. Do you see the Clippers as a potential NBA finalist this year that a lot of experts have been picking them to be?
You know, I picked the Clippers to win the top seed in the regular season to the West, but I did not pick them to go to the NBA Finals. Reason being is I think they're a really good regular season team that could score a ton of points. They have best point guard in the NBA, and they have some good pieces. I just don't think that they don't have a number two scorer that you need in the postseason. And I also don't think that they play enough defense. You know, their offense is so good right now. Their defense is just as bad. And I also wonder who's going to be the guy inside that can score for them. You know, besides dunking the basketball, there is Blake Griffin has no interior offensive game. And DeAndre Jordan, again, is a guy who, you know, flies above the rim. He's got no tactical offensive move or offensive game plan. So I think that they're going to miss the lack of defense, and then they're going to miss the lack of offensive interior presence when it comes to playoffs.
Okay, last prediction. Both of your hometown teams, once they get fully healthy, who finishes in the playoffs and who's not?
You know, it wouldn't surprise me if both make the playoffs. If I had to pick one, I would pick the Nets. You know, I just think that they have a lot more upside, as I mentioned, once they get healthy, if they get healthy. I think that the Nets will definitely finish higher than the Knicks. And I still think there's a chance that the Knicks get things together and possibly make some trades and make some changes to get themselves into the playoffs.
I find it hard to believe, though, that the Knicks can actually go out and make some deals. If we went over their salary structure, I don't think they have any besides Jumper that have any of the pieces that interest other teams. I'm having a really hard time really, you know, believing that they can really go out and make some moves, unless you're planning on moving a Chandler or an Anthony at this point.
Well, I would say when you've got as few wins as they have, anything is a possibility right now.
I agree with you 110%. Jared Greenberg from NBA TV, we appreciate you giving us a few minutes. We know that you're busy. Are you studio tonight, or are you off tonight?
I'll be in the studio tonight.
Alright, well, check him out on NBA TV. That's Jared Greenberg. Thanks for giving us a few minutes, brother. We really appreciate it.
Alright, guys, thanks a lot. Good luck.
Thanks, Jared.
Thanks, bud. Seriously, we could have gone over every. Like, I think we left off the Cavs and the Hawks. I think we nailed every other team out.
I just find it funny. Like, this was one of the great sports weekends. I mean, in recent memory, and we've talked an hour of NBA, which is, I mean, more than fine. But I mean, yeah, you look at it in the East, there's two teams, and in the West, there's 12 teams. The reality is, the Western Conference hasn't separated itself yet. It will eventually. The Eastern Conference can't continue to be on this trend. I thought it was interesting. He was talking about how, you know, the upgrade in Portland's bench, bringing in Thomas Robinson, bringing in Lopez. Wesley Matthews has been a lot better this year.
Yeah, he has.
And, you know, obviously they're probably not going to continue an 85% winning percentage. But, you know, even if that team ends up, you know, if this team makes the playoffs, you know, 5, 6, 7 seed, it's a heck of a year. But even like the teams you really expect, I expected nothing from Dallas this year. They're 11-8. I expected nothing from Denver this year. They're 11-6. You know, it really is the haves and the have-nots, and it is ugly east of the Mississippi right now.
You know, let's do it quickly to jump around to some of the other news stories that's been going around, you know, this great sports weekend. Start with the Alabama game, the Alabama-Auburn game, which is the greatest finish of all time. You know, nobody called that.
No. Well, it's rare that someone really predicts an 109-yard field goal return off of a 57-yard field goal by a backup kicker on the last play of the game. It's not predicted very often. The only ending I can remember that was as dramatic was Boise State, Oklahoma, 10 years ago, which was kind of the introduction of the mid-majors to really having the prowess in BCS. But it was not a national championship. It wasn't a game that was going to impact the national championship. Auburn has been on the luck. Auburn, you know, completes a 4th-17 pass 2 weeks ago to beat Georgia. And then after letting up a 99-yard touchdown pass to Alabama at 21-all, goes on this little, you know, plays a very strange, running the ball 7 consecutive times with 2 minutes to go. And then on the 8th time, they did a run-pass option. They tie the game with 30 seconds left. You know, the field goal was what it was. And, you know it's great when you can go on YouTube that night and see the reactions of people. I have friends from Alabama who are diehard Roll Tide people. And
that is possibly that is one of the more hardcore rivalries in sports. It's a little bit under the radar outside of the Southeast, but the hatred there goes well beyond just about anything that I can fathom.
Yeah, I was shocked to hear on the news and see that actually happened. And it was funny, the next day on Lupica's show, Lupica had Doug Flutie on, and he was talking about it, and they started comparing the two games. It was hysterical. Flutie goes, "Because that's nothing. They should try and do what I did." other stories, the NFL, I really enjoyed watching that Kansas City-Denver game. It was just fun to watch the game sort of go back and forth like that and just see how great Peyton Manning is against a really tough defense. Kansas City's offense doesn't really do anything for me. Alex Smith is a safe quarterback. He doesn't seem like he's a guy that you would want to bank the house on, you know what I mean?
Yeah, the words that have been used by him is that he's a system quarterback, he's a game manager. But the reality is he threw for about 370 yards. To be fair, was at a wedding, so I unfortunately didn't get to see the game. But he threw for about 350 yards, I thought. And his statistics have been better than what people anticipated. And most importantly is they haven't turned the ball over. Now, obviously, with I'm actually pulling it up right now. You know, with three consecutive losses, they're most likely going to end up as a number five seed in the AFC. But it's not a bad place to be. It's a team that won two games last year. So no matter what you're looking at, Smith threw for 293 yards and two touchdowns. So, you're not going to kill them over that. But they don't have the wide receiver game breakers. Dwayne Bowe has been a huge disappointment off a big contract. The running game is good with Charles, but they need a standout wideout, and they don't have one yet. Until then, they're a step behind Denver, because Denver's offense is unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't think if I would have told you after week 7 that the Jets and the Giants were going to have the same record at 5-7, would you believe me?
No, I didn't think the Jets were going to win 5 games this year.
I predicted 4 of them, actually.
I think I actually took them at 5-11. I think Sean took them at 4-12. It just reflects how good a defensive coach Rex Ryan is and how bad an offensive coach Rex Ryan is.
I think 3 weeks ago you talked about extension with Rex Ryan. I think now you part ways. I think that's what's going to end up happening here. Because I don't think a head coach would ever take a demotion to
defensive coordinator. No,
I don't think you would ever see that. So
I'm whether Ryan comes back. I think he's done a pretty good job this year. The reality is, and this really isn't his fault, they have no offensive talent. You look at the talent on the team, they have the worst wide receivers in the NFL. Probably in the bottom five in the running back committees in the NFL. Their quarterbacks are in the bottom five of the NFL. Their tight end, they don't even know who their tight end is, Cumberland, who's in the bottom of the NFL. Their offensive line is mediocre, except for Nick Mangold. Even your best player, the best offensive player is your center. It doesn't really bode well going forward. And Geno Smith has been a disaster in the last month.
No, I agree with you 100% on that. Geno, they have to make a decision on whether Geno is their guy. And they have to stick with it because he's walking on eggshells.
Well, what's really interesting, and we talk about this a lot on the Seth and Sean show, is we go into, potential draft picks, things along those lines. The NFL this year, the upcoming draft, although surprisingly the number one quarterback in the draft has decided to pull out Marcus Mariota from Oregon, is you have 7 to 10 potential first-round talents at quarterback. But most of these guys may not be drafted because the teams don't need it. So the Jets may be in an interesting position to take a wideout, say a Marquise Lee, from USC in the first round, and maybe draft a quarterback in the second round, a David Foles from San Jose State. We were saying Aaron Murray from Georgia, so he tore his ACL. So, you know, they're in an interesting position. Remember, they drafted Geno Smith just last year, and it's kind of hard to give up on your second-round pick after 1 year.
Yeah, it's not the right decision, but you have to find a team that will be willing to take them if you're going to try and move up, and you have some decisions to make. I don't think Manziel is really going to be a great pro. I just don't see it. I look at Manziel as another Tebow. Great college quarterback, not being able to have that success.
No, I don't see that at all. I think Manziel will be fine in the NFL. I think he has to hit a system that fits him, though. And the ironic part is the system I think that would have fit him best is Philly, because actually Chip Kelly, who's the coach in Philly, wanted Manziel, but when Mariota, who then went to Oregon, Manziel decided to go to Texas A&M. But with Nick Foles, with 19 touchdowns and no interceptions, I don't know that you're not going to replace him. I think Manziel will be fine. I think he just has to be in a position to succeed. And, you know, and I realize that's a kind of a vague statement. But if you put him in, like, where Geno is right now, I think he would fall flat on his ass. But that being said, in a team where there's some veteran leadership, where he can grab, I mean, he may be the starter, but he doesn't have to be the overall leader to start the team, I think he'll be good. I think he'll be, he's fun, he's a good quarterback, he's just got oozes charisma, and he can lead a team. He can lead a team. It's not something very few quarterbacks can lead a team in their first year.
No, I agree. And then we were just split up the name of Tim Tebow. Apparently there's a bidding war that's starting for him to see if who's going to get him in the broadcast booth, which would signal the end of his career. Do you think that he deserves another shot in the NFL or no?
I think he should go to the CFL and see if he can develop the quarterback. I mean, the reality is that he won 8 games with Denver. So there's got to be something that he does. Because I apologize to our religious brethren who are listening, but I truly refuse to believe that God really cares if Tim Tebow wins football games. So he brings something. Now, his refusal to try to play another position kind of baffles me. It would make sense that if you want to be in the NFL that badly, you still have a better chance bidding your time playing tight end, playing whatever, if that's possible. But I don't think he's going to get another shot. I think it's over.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you on that too. Seth, we're at the end of our run here. I think it was definitely a good show. I really appreciate you coming on, and you know, hopefully we can have you back on with us again.
Always happy to come back. Just to give a little bit of shout out to our show, Seth and Sean on Tuesday nights at 7 o'clock, and you can listen on archive off of backsportspage.com. Thanks for having me on, Randy.
You got it, brother. Real Sports Talk Radio will be back next week, 7 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. For Randy Zilia, Real Sports Talk Radio, backsportspage.com.
Good night, everybody.